Hello everyone, Rob here. Before we start the show this week, which is a discussion about pro-immigration movements in Delaware and anti-ICE organizing with our friends Maria and Andrew, I wanted to let you guys know, if you're listening to this on the day it drops, tomorrow, Saturday, we are going to be having the Delaware Call Fall Classic. Yorkland Center for Creative Arts. It's a 19th century baseball exhibition. There's a barbecued food truck. There's a hospitality tent. It's open bar, you know. There's a brass band playing 19th century marching music to get you in the mood. And I've been tracking the weather very closely. We've had a wet week. We can all, you know, agree to that. That might change conditions. We had to play a 7-inning game for the first annual. And you know what? It was fun. People had fun. We played a 9-inning game last year that went down to the wire, and a working 9-1. I mean, you're not going to want to miss it. That's kind of what I'm trying to say. It's kind of a thing now. It's the third annual. So, yeah. Come up Saturday at noon. We're going to start, pre-gaming. Whatever you say. I don't know what they said in the 19th century. Probably just taking bets and smoking cigars. Link will be in the show notes. And I hope to see you there. One more announcement. This is more of like a bunker rule now. We know about the helicopters. You know, we know about that stuff. So, as everyone knows, we don't talk about our patrons, who subscribes to the podcast, who is who gives $5 a month, $10 a month. We don't talk about that. Some people have mentioned it in here. Chancery Daily very graciously sort of gave us, you know, some promotion. I think others have. But we don't bring it up. What I will say is this. We have a lot of free subscribers. And look, that's fine. That's fine. People say, it's been said in this business that sometimes for certain kinds of media, for certain kinds of shows, you have to give it a year, you know. A lot of people just get sound bites. People send them like timestamps. And they kind of like, oh, this is what it is. It's not, you got to give it a year. I get that. So I have nothing against these free subscribers. But we also know, like, when you became a free subscriber. So we know, like, you're digging it. Like, you want to get the updates. And you want to get the early, hear it as early as possible to know whether, oh, he got in trouble with this legislator. Or he said a slur and a joke. You want all of that stuff. You really got to support it. There's tons of stuff we're gonna start doing in sort of conjunction with others in this space that's going to be the likes of which no one's ever seen before. You want to get in on the ground floor. Help us out. Patreon.com/TheHighlandsBunker. But actually, the free subscribers already know. You're just like one click away. So, you know. Do some soul searching, you know, search your soul, your heart, and, show us some love if you'd like to. Anyway, enjoy our conversation with Maria and Andrew. Go Birds, fuck ICE, free Palestine. Left is best. So the story is, some people have heard this, but some people have not. I was at an event, fancy, swanky event, for Planned Parenthood. As people know, Nurse Susan is she works there. She worked there, and then she didn't, and then she does again. And so we're at this swanky event. And I saw many, many dignitaries. I saw Paul Baumbach. I saw Eric Morrison. I saw, who else did I see? Frank Burns. Got no big conversation. And then I saw the host of the evening, or who was giving the keynote speech, was the Attorney General. The Kathy of Kathy v. Kathy. The first Kathy or the second Kathy. Whichever Kathy. Whichever one it was. And she was wearing a pink business suit. Looked great. It was cool. And I was wearing a blue suit with a pink shirt and a retro tie, a retro pink tie. And so I turned to Susan. I said, do you think you could take a photo of the AG and me, because we're both wearing pink? Do you think it would be like, I don't know, how would she take it? She's like, oh, I'll just go over and ask her. So I walk over. She's in a conversation with the ACLU director, Mike Brickner. And I'm not dropping names. I'm using this because this is going to be a funny sort of, this is funny, right? So I go up to Mike and Kathy talking, and I said, oh, look at this. The ACLU and the AG coming together. This is great. This is something else. I said, this is so good. I said, Madam Attorney General, would you mind taking a photo with me? You're wearing a beautiful pink suit. I'm wearing a pink shirt. I think it would be neat. And then I saw she's holding like a plate of hors d'oeuvres, like a food or something. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to ask why you were eating. But, you know, she was like, okay. She's like, Michael, hold my plate. So Mike holds the plate. I get the picture with the AG. I said, Susan, did you get the picture? She said, I did. And I went to turn to the AG to say thank you. She was already gone. She fucking split.
Cloud of smoke.
She was like, meow, gone. I was like, thank you. So let me just say it now. Thank you, Kathy, for taking the photo. It was very nice. All I wanted was, because of the pink thing, like, Susan even, I said, did she run away? And Susan goes, I think she thinks you're going to do a bit. I'm like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense why she would think that. So, yeah, that was it. I did see also Senator Chris Coons. I didn't see him until late because of my vision. Susan's like, oh, you're bumping into people. We got to go. She's doing that, so I don't see him. And I saw him, and she's pushing me through the thing, and I was like, oh, genocidal freak, genocidal freak. She's like, you got to go. So here we are tonight. Oh, man. From the Shadow Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. And boy, was I in it tonight, baby. This is Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Hello. I'm fucking super pumped. I'm already on a high because of the photo, the AG photo. And we have, like, friends and comrades all over the place. But we have something very important to talk about tonight, and that is how we're combating ICE in Delaware, how we're looking out for immigrants and other people in Delaware to make sure that they're not, sent to concentration camps. And so we have our friend and comrade, Maria Beauchamp. Hello.
Hi. It's
so great to see you all the time. Thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you. I'm excited to be here. I came comfy. I'm at home.
That means a lot to me. Thank you.
Thank you.
And somebody who's the first time in the studio, Andrew. You know what? We call you Andrew R. Your last name is
Ramsaran.
Yeah, Ramsaran. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I'll accept
that. Is it close enough or not good?
It's good. It's good. I've it's over the threshold.
Okay, thank you. Ramsaran, because I fuck shit up.
You're fine.
But thank you. And we also have a crew here. We have Bill Martin. Hello, Bill.
Good morning. Good Friday morning.
Hello. If you're a sicko, it's Friday morning right now. That's right. There's a couple in this room right now. And Carl is here, as always, on the ones and twos, on the knobs. So if you have any complaints, just send Carl care of Working Families Party, Delaware, .com. That's not a thing, is it? Okay. Don't use the org. That's real. For God's sakes. So we convened tonight sort of as fast as we could whenever you guys were ready to talk about what's being done to combat ICE, to combat sort of threats and menacing of immigrant communities and other people. And I've been following like the Avello protests and all of that stuff. But I just want to talk about like what you guys are doing, how it's working, and if it's growing. So Maria, I'll let you sort of start out and sort of talk about what kind of organizing you're doing, who you're speaking to, and what's going on out there. Like, I know that there's been a little bit of ICE activity in Delaware, some in Sussex, a little bit in Wilmington, I think, but I don't know a lot about it, so I kind of want to find that out too.
Yeah, so I guess one of the first things I did when I came right back home from spending so much time in Puerto Rico organizing there was sort of get in touch with the community as to what are we not doing, what are we missing. And one of the things we realized, it was leadership building. We just didn't have enough Hispanics gathered together to talk about how can we come together for community. So through Network Delaware, we started the Luisa Capetillo Hispanic Community Leadership Program and quickly got plugged in with different organizations, nonprofits, and community members. And through those conversations, the topic that was on everyone's mind, it's like, well, what are we going to do now with ICE and the current administration and what's happening? And we just don't know, like, how can we get together? And Delaware is big and small enough where if you start talking to different individuals, you could quickly gather that some people are working on different projects. So that was true for me to find, oh, well, there is people working. But also it was true to find, wait, there's people saying that they're working and they're not doing anything. Like, what's going on with that, right? Or announcing resources that they actually didn't have. So it was kind of scary to know that we need to provide resources for our community members and they're being pointed to places that don't have those resources or that are at capacity and no one is sort of like helping them.
Yeah. I just had this conversation with Kirsten Walther today about just planning campaigns and planning actions. It's like you need to know what you need and you need to know if you have it. You know, if you're going up against, you know, serious opposition, as she would say, you need to know who's with you, what resources you need, but what resources you have. And if you think you have them and you don't, that's a big problem. It's a huge problem.
Yeah. Especially when you have organizations that this is something that they should have been doing all along for many years, some probably for decades. And when you actually ask them, what are the concrete steps that we could take as a community? They're like, oh, well, here's a phone number and a list of numbers you could call. So that's not really helpful. But then also we were able to identify that there were organizations that had staff members ready to go, but didn't have the training on how to approach elected officials or find resources. So that's one of the things that we got to do right away. Just be able to get those individuals and train them on this is how you navigate the system, this is how you get information, and then this is also how you push. So, and then through that, we were able to organize community members to say, hey, you know, here are some public policies that are going to affect our community. We need you guys to prepare and be there, talk, push. But a lot of community members were like, well, I don't even know the basics of government. Like, who is our senator and what do they actually do? And what's the difference between, like, our federal senators and our state-level senators? Like, it was, like, a lot of confusion. So it has been, at least from my end, just building from the very beginning on, like, basic civic engagement with the community and having organizations like La Esperanza opening the door for me to do workshops with the community as well as with the Haitian coalition and do workshops with them. To start with that very first step, what is government and why you should care about that?
Yeah, how was that interacting? I mean, was there, like, I guess maybe we'll take a step back. What's been happening in Delaware as far as the immigrant community? Have things ramped up? Are they seeing ICE incidents? I know right at the beginning of sort of the ramp up, there was some stories like in Spotlight Delaware about people being afraid to go outside, go to the grocery store, you know, do anything that is going to sort of expose them in public. What's going on in Delaware? Like, how are people doing? What's happening?
So when I first started visiting Lower Delaware, I was able to quickly see the difference of maybe a couple months ago, where people were going to the stores, they were doing the shopping themselves, they were going to the organizations for aids and receive services with no problem. But when I visited, it was crickets. You were not able to see community members out and about. They were not going to receive services directly, afraid to go to the stores. And if you did not look Hispanic and you enter a Hispanic store, everyone would freeze. Like, okay, who are you? Why are you here? What's going on? Which looked different in Northern Delaware. You know, you still go out in 4th Street, Rodriguez. You're going to see the people there. People are shopping. People are going out. So it's interesting how in Delaware, Lower Delaware, Northern Delaware looks a little different. But as the month has continued to pass, we're starting to see more activity. And I think Andrew can talk more about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're not seeing like what we're seeing on the news, right? Like in these occupied cities. I think what we see in Delaware is there is a small amount of ICE agents from HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, Enforcement and Removal Operations. They do have a few in the Dover office, but it's not like a huge force. So what they're doing a lot of is basically, I think a theme tonight is going to be like racial profiling. You know, they're going around early in the morning, stopping a car that's, you know, it looks like it might be a bunch of workers on their way to work, and basically intimidating them into not exercising their right, or maybe they are, and having them identify themselves as undocumented and picking them up, and they need to get out of there pretty quickly before the community finds out. And they run up to Philly, get them out of state, and they start to get sucked up in that system of where are they getting shipped to, who can give them legal aid now that they're out of the state. So yeah, it is a small number, but it is, I'm sure it is, you know, it's still horrifying for the families that get affected, and they're, you know, the father goes out to work in the morning and then doesn't come home, right? And the car is sitting on the side of the road, and they find out through social media that he probably got picked up because the car is abandoned, right? So yeah, that's mostly what it looks like in Delaware right now.
And I would say too that it's true that it doesn't look like other spaces. I know, like, actually I was speaking to Andrew at one point, and I think even to Carl, some sort of meeting, and like, you know, I still spend my time in Puerto Rico and I come back and forth. Puerto Rico is horrible. I saw a van full of children being taken away without any adults. People are dying over there. No one is investigating their deaths, as they're dying because ICE is chasing them and people are falling off the building.
So ICE is operating in Puerto Rico as well to find people who, I guess the racial profiling is a little bit more difficult. But,
well, because they're mostly going after Dominicans, and they tend to concentrate in a specific area in San Juan, Rio Piedras. In Puerto Rico, unlike Delaware is like a sanctuary state, right? We, our governor, it has a different approach to this. In Puerto Rico, you have a Republican governor that loves Trump. She did not need a 287G to do the work. Like, they're just, oh, yeah, we love, yeah, come on, come here. We'll give them to you. Here's the list. Here's how you can find them. There's no protection for the communities in Puerto Rico at all whatsoever. So I think for me to be able to see that and go through those emotions of, like, what's going on? And as a Puerto Rican, I know people have asked me, well, why do you care so much? You're fine. You're legal. You're a citizen. Yeah, my citizenship is not in the Constitution of the United States. So we do have a crazy guy that is in control. And if he wants to, and it's going to be a complex legal process, but it could be done, right? We could have the Jones Act be revised, and maybe we could lose our citizenship. So we should care, and we should know our history better to understand that we have to stand out with our brothers and sisters no matter what.
Yeah, that's a great segue into something that Andrew mentioned that I want to talk about to see what's going on, and then I'll have my own sort of comment on it. But the community, when they know this stuff is happening, is standing up. Or they're trying to, and I know this is happening all over the country, You mentioned, like, you know, they're going to have to do, ICE is going to have to do their work quickly because people will stand up to this.
Right.
And I don't know whether you want to sort of talk about that a little bit in the community.
Yeah. So I guess what I went to network as well pretty early on after the inauguration to kind of talk about, hey, like, I'm seeing a lot of arguments about, like, who should say what. Should we say Delaware is a sanctuary state? Like, who should make what statement? But then, like, my thing was, like, they make the statement and then what? Like, there's no infrastructure in Delaware to, like, prepare for what we need ahead. So I was working with, can I say Kirsten?
I think I just did it before.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So
Kirsten's a big a big quarterback in all of this.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah,
we must say
she helped me.
Carl will beep it out.
Yeah. If you need to, go ahead.
he won't.
Kirsten.
Yeah. So we were working on. You know, she encouraged me to talk to these other states that were opening their books, how their ecosystem operates in North Carolina, Connecticut were some of the early states that talked to me. And then, you know, as we saw, LA, DC, they all opened up what lessons they were learning to us. And we kind of mapped out like a basic like base we would need to make community organizing useful. And, you know, that's one of the hats now that we're working on as a community together to have that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I've thought about as the kind of person that I am. When you see sort of videos of things, Los Angeles, Chicago, seen them all over the country, really. But we are sort of fortunate that the state apparatus isn't really down for it. So that's helpful. But I do want to say that I know this comes as sort of like, you know, you don't want to give people advice and tell them to do something like this, but people are going to have to physically resist some of this stuff. Like, if you see your neighbor getting pulled into a car by people who don't have badges on, you're going to have to kind of do something about that.
Intervene.
Yeah, I mean, filming, it's good. Physically intervening is probably what you need to do, especially if you're a citizen, especially if you're white, and you can just do whatever you can do to sort of throw your body upon the gears, as they say. We talked last week about like courage, having political courage and bravery. This takes a little more than that. And, you know, I understand that, so I'm not like saying, hey, go fight the cops. But I kind of am saying you kind of have to fight the cops because this is very nasty business. There's no sort of law behind it other than just round these people up and we'll do what we want and let the chips fall where they may. And that's not appropriate. So I know people don't want to kind of go out on a limb and sort of make a statement about it, but I'll do it. You're going to have to intervene and not allow this and show people that you're not going to allow it. And it's going to be scary. You're going to put yourself at a little bit of risk, but it's just something that's going to have to be done if you want to live in a place that's like normal, where like human beings live. So, you know, I think that's a very important point to make for people who, sort of like you were saying before, like, oh, well, you're Puerto Rican, so you're a citizen, and it's fine. You don't have to do anything. That's not really right.
Yeah. I guess I'm going – am I allowed to disagree with you?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I think earlier on, one of the things I kind of realized was a lot of, like, these affected families don't want that because it puts their family member more at risk. They want the information. They want the help. They want like eyes on it to know where their family member's going, if anything was violated, like how to get them back. But yeah, I think that was something I had to learn early on. Was like, I think a lot of the cases you see in the news were activists already early on that were connected in and were like, yeah, go ham. Like if they come get me. But as far as in Delaware, like the regular everyday people, it's they don't want their family member to be made an example of. So
right. That's fair. No, yeah, I'm glad you said that. I can't. Did you not think that you could disagree with me, or did you not think
this could get edited out? Maybe.
No, this is staying in. This is definitely. This is the kind of shit that if it doesn't stay in, Carl's fired.
Okay.
No, I appreciate that. You know, I always. Yeah, I mean, it does put people at risk. And the thing, like you said, I think is important, is it not only puts the people who are intervening at risk, but it puts, you know, the subject in greater risk, too. So it's a valid point. So I take your point, yeah, for real.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that throughout, like, the different states and spaces. You have what I like to call them now, they're OG activists and people ready to, when they see ICE, before ICE gets to do any detentions and stops, they already know how to like get them out of the communities. They're able to put that pressure. I think here in Delaware, we haven't been able to capture that and put that together. And also, luckily, we haven't quite really needed to do that. But I think if they take anyone, even if it's just one person or two, that's one too many. So we could see that in the country, we have around 60,000 people who are in detention centers at the moment as of September. On overcrowded facilities, we're looking at about 10,000 people that are in solidarity. But so we're looking at families that came to the United States to have a better opportunity. Mind you, and this is why it's important to know your history, a lot of these families that come to the United States are forced to come because of what the United States at one point or another did to their homeland. You know, like I come from a colonized too. We're still a colony. Right. And I come from a lineage of people that have been experimented on because of the United States, just so we could have birth control, women that were forced to be sterilized and so forth and so on. So if we do not know our history, we could completely be like, oh, no, they're buying into that narrative. They're criminals and they're here to take from us. And that's why. No, we're talking about the working force. Looking at about 90% of the people being detained is part of the working force here in Delaware. So you're taking your everyday person that gets up really early to go to work, just make a living, have a decent life, because they were forced to leave their homeland. No one wants to leave their homeland. I always go to Puerto Rico, do the work, come back, and I'm excited to be here. And Delaware is my second home. I've been here since the late 90s, but I didn't want to come. I wanted to stay home. And people that buy into that narrative that we have to push them out, we have to take them in, and, you know, they deserve that. You do not know your history, and that's why you are applauding this bullshit.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, pretty much every community who's feeling the brunt of this is, number one, here for a particular reason. And number two, here for a reason that is perfectly, it's built into the system. You know, these are people who are doing, who are working, doing all kinds of different labor. Or they're running from conflict that we have a hand in. You know, so the idea that somehow people show up here to do bad stuff, it's kind of stupid. People show up here to work. They show up here to, some of them, to run for their lives. Now, just like any other group of people, some of them are going to maybe do crime. I've done a few crimes. I mean, look, that's why Bill's an attorney. He's here.
That's why Kathy ran from you.
That's why she ran. She was like, this guy, I'm going to have to prosecute this guy at some point. But yeah, I mean, I think that's an incredibly important point, that the people who are being set upon and menaced and rounded up are just people here because we want them here. We want them here to work. And it's just mind-boggling, the situation that we're in.
It is, and talking about the legal piece of it too. The system truly is set up to fail them. There's not enough lawyers. Like, there's just, the ratio is what, 1,645 to 1?
That's have you ever, Bill? Crazy. Bill, have you heard? Have you heard that there's not enough lawyers? Is that a thing you've heard before?
Immigration lawyers.
Well, yeah.
Especially in Delaware, right?
No, there's plenty. Well, corporate lawyers. There's too many.
Are there even a dozen? I mean, yeah, in Delaware?
I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe not.
One of my neighbors is, but no, I know it is a system designed to fail in that respect.
Andrew, can you talk a little bit about the Avello actions you've been doing? Because I actually had a conversation with somebody last night about this. Because I've used Avello. I will never do it again, but because it is a little convenient nicety that has been set up here for obvious reasons. But can you talk a little bit about, for people who don't know, what they're doing and why people are out protesting them? Can you give them some background on that?
Yeah, so that was something I was into, but I stepped off a little bit more to focus on this ICE watch development space. But Avello is our only commercial airliner in Delaware. They have kind of a sucky business model. And to supplement that, they took a contract to fly deportation flights. Kind of now it's their main business. I believe Delaware may be the only profitable airport they're running out of because of the Puerto Rico line at this point. So they've basically used ICE deportation flights to subsidize the losses on the commercial side. And they're not separating the business. So any of the tax breaks, the subsidies they get from us and other areas kind of end up subsidizing their lovely unmarked planes, which we've started to see at Wilmington Airport. They're not flying deportation flights out of here, but
you see the planes coming in.
Yeah, they're using them for regular commercial flights, and it's embarrassing people this plane 2 days ago took some family
who knows where.
Yeah,
a pit in El Salvador.
Yeah.
And now it's taking you to Nashville or wherever they fly.
Yeah,
Carolinas.
I'm going to Charleston.
Charleston.
Yeah, that's
a better pull.
Yesterday I went to alligator fucking Auschwitz.
Yeah.
Now it's going to fucking Charleston.
Yeah. I was excited when they started. I took the first flight for the ceremony of where they spray the plane with the hose when it lands or takes off. But yeah, I think there's now a strain between the airline and the people aware of what they're doing in Delaware that's probably going to, tank them like they did on the entire West Coast. They pulled out of another airport in the Northeast, I believe, last week because they're damaging their image, making a dumb business decision for a short-term gain. And people don't want to pay for that.
Yeah, as I said before, it's like, they can do no other. They feel obligated. We got to make money. So, I mean, is there money to be made in shipping people to the concentration camps? I guess so. If I don't do it, the next person's going to do it. And that's really what we're up against. And so people really need to take that super seriously because that's what it is. It's not like an evil person. Obviously, what they're doing is very bad. But it's somebody who feels an obligation that if I don't make this money, somebody else is going to. And so I'm going to, I guess we got to fly people to the camps. I don't really know what else to do. It's sick. It's very sick.
But how disconnected are you? I mean, I remember I was in eighth grade when I went to the Holocaust Museum for the first time. I barely even knew English. And I remember the smell of the shoes in there just really catching me and trying to transport me to that era as much as I could with the information I had. That was enough to just really, truly change my life and how I wanted to advocate for others and truly learn about history. So every documentary I've read in Frank's diary so many times, how disconnected are you that you cannot say, hey, so, when Hitler was around and the business owners and all that, what were they saying to themselves? What was that excuse? Let me make sure I don't fall into that. Because we're literally walking towards that path at this moment. There's enough evidence in history to let us know that's the path that we're walking.
Yeah, I mean, I was I didn't want to be sort of someone who was like, oh my God, it's fascism. We're all going to die. And I sort of not downplayed it, but played it like, look, this is the situation that we're in. We'll probably get out of it here. But the more that it goes on, the less I think that. And the more I think, like, more people have to get involved in it. The passivity is actually going to get us all killed.
Yeah, I think if when we get through the other side, there are people that are going to be gone and not come back. And, like, we can't just wait for the midterms to not organize around stuff like
right.
this.
That's right.
You know, because there's people that aren't going to come back, and we need to care about them to keep those numbers as low as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's people who are getting, I think, ice fired on a moving vehicle this week and killed somebody mm-hmm. in Chicago, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, this is nasty business. And, you know, people are not really prepared for what it is. They're not, they've been, I don't know, lulled to sleep or sort of like coddled a little bit. And that's not going to fly now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I do want to plug in that, like, even though I've stepped off the Avelo thing, I know Delaware Democratic Socialists of America continue to work on it in coalition with, like, Indivisible Highlands and Beyond is still hosting their protest at the airport. So if you want to pick up and do some work on that issue, they're still going at it. And there's a couple more, but those are the two that I can think of right now.
Yeah, I know that they're doing that. And yeah. You know, at this point, that really helps. Showing up there once a month or however often they do it to be like, we disagree with this. We're not down for it. And we're going to take time out of our day to go and say that we're not. It actually is pretty meaningful. Yeah. So
overall, was it a pretty positive experience to be outside the airport and, like,
yeah,
and protest in that manner?
Like, yeah.
Were people generally supportive? Because I was skeptical that they were, but then the more I've thought about it, I bet people like to see that you care about something.
They do. I think it's generally positive. You do have generally maybe one crazy every weekend that, like, pulls out and, you know,
I can imagine what they're driving. Yeah. I can imagine in my head.
Takes off their shirt.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Rubs their butt crack in kids' faces, and we're like,
wait.
All right, like, please get away from
them. Wait, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. That's the type of person that does that.
But I think, like, when you analyze everything, like, our democracy really is at play. And even, like, all right, so you like money, capitalism, but this is something that you really need to take into consideration. So just last month, ICE issued a subpoena to our Department of Labor, and they demanded payroll records for 15 businesses, names, addresses, wages, social security numbers, all sealed. So the businesses themselves weren't even told. So imagine that. You're working, providing for your family, and without your knowledge, your most personal information is being funneled to ICE. What's up with that? Why is this happening? And the Department of Labor pushed back. They say this is government intrusion, and they're right. Delaware's own Department of Justice is contesting this in court because this isn't just paperwork. It's racial targeting dressed up as enforcement. And when you keep these subpoenas secret, you traumatize workers, you destabilize businesses, and you destroy trust in our institutions. But we need them on seal. What's going on? And why are we not talking enough about this? Why are we not pissed off?
Yeah, I think the courage thing actually comes down to bureaucrats and officials. You know, you need the courage not just to sort of step up and say, we don't like this, we're not giving this information, but to come out and say, this is not right. We're not only are we not providing the information you want, we're in full disagreement. We're in revolt. We're not doing this. And I think that's the step that really needs to be done. I don't know. I would guess that, and I don't want to talk bad about my friend Kathy. No, the AG friend. I mean, I don't want to talk bad.
You guys
bad
were
about
matching
it.
And everything.
We were matching.
So
she was in
not
pink. I was in pink. You know, and I know that she's trying.
Yeah, you know, as attorneys general go, she's fine.
Yeah, so she's trying. But I think what I've noticed just being in that realm for a little while is that people really want to, as much as they can, stay in their lane. Like, even if they do something a little bit, like, even if they join a lawsuit with other attorneys general.
Mm-hmm. Nailed it.
You know what I'm talking about. Like, even if they do that, like, they're like, oh, I'm really out on a limb here. You kind of have to do a little bit more.
Yeah.
You kind of got to do a J.B. Pritzker and be like, no, we'll fight.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have to do that.
You can't wait till it's a guaranteed win to, like, take your stance.
No, you can't. At this point, the political calculation, the way I would look at it, is the political calculation has changed. Like, at one point, you'd be like, well, I'll say what I need to say, and I'll prove that I'm on whatever side of the argument, but that's as far as I'll go because there's a political calculation. Like, I don't want to be looked at as a radical, or that I'm stepping outside my lane, or all of this stuff. Now, the problem is, if you continue with that line and kind of just step out when you feel like it's appropriate or you're not at any risk, it's like a risk management sort of thing, then we're probably going to get fucked up. Like, that's actually not going to work, because your opponent is not doing that. They're not on the same page there. So they'll push it and push it and push it. And then by the time you get to the point where you're like, well, I feel like it's politically expedient to basically say stop, they've already blown through the stop sign.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the issue.
Right. You know? So right now, I think as it stands, last month was that hearing where the issue was made more public. I believe the subpoenas were made. There were a few subpoenas made from February into April that just kind of sat on a desk until Julianne Murray came around. And so she kind of pushed it to the front of the priority pile. And there was an August 6th hearing. But whatever steps both sides had to make, kind of their timeline expired September 12th. So as far as I know, the pushback from the federal government, like, they never made their case. So motions were, I'm guessing, made to unseal those subpoenas. And the judge that the decision kind of sits with right now was the prosecutor of the Capano thing. I know you love Capano references, Bill.
The Colm Connolly?
Oh, my God.
Colm Connolly?
Yeah.
Federal Judge Colm Connolly?
So this is actually an appropriate mention of the Capano murder case.
Yes.
This is like, you're not just shoehorning it in.
So, yeah. So
Tom Capano used to go to Galuccio's and get pizza.
Yeah. So this was the guy that prosecuted the guy that owns Galuccio's or something.
Yeah. Colm Connolly, actually, as friends of the show will know, also sentenced the Bethany Beach police team who stole all of the overtime money.
Yeah. That was like just this past week.
Just this past week. Colm Connolly was the federal judge on that, too. And said that he felt obligated to sort of make a statement here, because these are like cops and it's like public trust and people don't trust the cops. But then when you read a little further, he was like not saying a bunch of great stuff. It was just like, you know, like, you guys are going after these cops, and sometimes there's outside. I felt like it seemed like when I was reading the sentencing statement from the judge that he was going to say something about outside agitators.
So he was like kind of giving them cover?
He definitely said he felt like they let their comrades down, kind of thing. And it's like, hey, people don't trust the cops already, and now you're doing this, you know. And but he still went back to like the bad apples. Like, it's just the bad apples that make the cops look like this. But that's your Colm Connolly. That's your guy.
Yeah. So I guess he seems to be like calculating it still. But I know in the past with his I guess, I don't know, is it called inauguration interviews or whatever? He made statements against, like, racial profiling is bad. Like, I know it exists. People in law enforcement do it as an excuse. You know, they use their role as in law enforcement to enforce that. I wonder if he's going to stand up now by those comments. It's kind of on his desk, and his decision makes or breaks this. I know as community organizers, we need to be preparing for this, because all it does is unseal the subpoenas, right? Like, we get to know the businesses. They get to make their decisions about how to keep their people safe. They're being selected because they're either minority owned or that's what their staff or their customers are. But people need to be making the steps now to protect the customers and the employees. So that's probably where we need to be putting the energy right now as far as community organizing.
Yeah, we need to get racial profiling out of the shadows. Like, let's transparency. Come on. Now.
I think the scary thing is that the racial profiling is out in the open, is actually not in the shadows. Where, like, I mean, if you see internet clips of, you know, highly placed people, they're saying, yeah, I mean, if you look like you're trying to get day work and you're brown and you're at a Home Depot, we're pulling you in.
Yeah.
I mean, they're being very obvious
about
it.
But on paper, it's not. And we also need that on paper. Yeah. Like, on record, I want that on paper. I need that to come out of the shadows. Yeah. And the harassment, I need that on paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know part of when I mean, Representative Gorman's doing great work on her immigration bill, so this isn't like a slight against her, but...
Can I disagree with you on this? No, I'm just kidding. I was waiting to fuck with you on that.
Okay. But when she was working on them, there were other law enforcement adjacent...
Bad apples?
Yeah. I don't know about apples, but more like cookies that were on... that were arguing that how dare you suggest law enforcement racially profile, but I think we've been watching the patterns for long enough to know, like, that is kind of one of the only things
I say about that. Yeah. Come on, buddy. Yeah. We know better than that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of one of the main things. I know there are other angles like this where they're trying to get information on who's undocumented, like. But right now, there's so little cooperation from the state, because we got lucky, that it's not really worth their time to come in and do the big pickups like you saw at the Hyundai plant. But they're trying to make it worth their time by forcing through the courts things like this. And, you know, we need to prepare to soften the blow as much as we can, but also, like, support the communities that will be affected when eventually one of these things go through.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. I think it's important to say, like, while we're in a, you know, not the most terrible context here in this state, or, you know, on the East Coast or whatever, the only thing that sort of keeps us there is the activism you guys are doing and the organizing you guys are doing. I mean, not for nothing. And who am I to badmouth the governor? I would never do that. I mean, I would never do it. But, you know, if the organizing and the activism and the advocacy and the voices kind of fell off, would the governor stay with it? Probably not. Now, again, they'll probably say, oh, no. He would do it. But this is important to keep us where we are. You know, to keep us in this situation, like you're saying, where, okay, we're not really cooperating. There are things happening. We can address them. But that takes a lot of work just to keep it at that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, just what you're doing is keeping it at a manageable way. So, hey, oh, only four people got disappeared this month. Oh, that's great. Like, it's not great. And what the work you guys are doing is keeping it at a level where it's at least manageable. Because if it wasn't for you doing all of this, who knows, it would fall off.
Yeah, this is like responding to like trauma. And I remember for Hurricane Maria, setting up like help to gathering information coming from Puerto Rico and like, hey, I'm trying to find my family member, or like, I need help removing a body that's been sitting in my house for like 4 days and I don't know how to reach anyone. And just like one call after another, I get to see all of this and compare it to that. So you get a call from like a family member who says, well, my partner just got picked up. I don't know where my partner is, but I now just became a single mom. I have a child. And by the way, I don't work. He's the sole breadwinner of the household. And I don't know what I'm going to do for food. I don't know what I'm going to do for diapers. Like, that's what's actually happening. It is happening in our state. So we have to care, and the organizing has to go. I think for organizations that, like the Delaware Coalition for Immigration Justice, the individuals that are coming together to work on things like that, it's great. It's needed. Create a hotline for people to report whether they see ICE activity, but also a hotline where people can get connected to resources. And I think also a space that will allow the community to gather data and information of like, all right, who are the most affected? Where is it still higher in lower Delaware? Are we seeing it closer to the borders? And all of this information that could come from that kind of work. And individuals like No Borders Delaware, all the different organizations, groups, and people coming together is going to be key to do this kind of work. Unfortunately, it's not something that we're just going to be able to put like a Band-Aid and just like do that and that's it. This is going to take long-term commitments. It's going to also take for political parties to get their shit together and really understand, so how is the oppressor communicating with our people? Why are Hispanic Latinos tending now to move more right? What is happening? Like, are we not like listening enough? Like, what are their needs that we are not caring for? Why do we have Hispanics like applauding the fact that there's deportations, right? Or mourning the death of someone like Charlie Kirk, who did not want people that look like them here. So all of that is very complex, but we have to have the tough conversation, understand why it's happening, and then create those platforms. We need more Hispanics to run for office in Delaware. We do. We need it. We need more public policy for our migrant communities. And we need to actually also have more people from the migrants community run for office as well. The people that know the pain because they've been through it, because they know it firsthand, that's the kind of people you need in office. We don't need any more lawyers. No offense.
None taken.
You don't see Bill running for shit, do you? You don't, look, there's no offense. If Bill's like, I'm not fucking running for shit.
But if Bill runs, I will support him.
Thank you. Yeah.
This is your core team here.
County Council 2062.
There we go. Yeah. Carl, you got that right.
Carl will be my campaign manager.
But yeah, so basically all of that to say, we need to really understand why things are happening, how they're happening, and then not just what are we going to do right now or maybe tomorrow, but what is going to be our long-term goals to make sure that we finally start taking care of an issue that no one on either side has done anything for.
Wait, Maria, can I ask you something? I think earlier on you mentioned that there are organizations locally that are holding themselves out as helpful resources, but are maybe not upholding their obligation or following through on what their stated goals are. Would you mind talking about that at all? Or maybe I just misunderstood.
I mean, there is organizations, I think. All right, so for me personally, if I see that something is wrong and I am like there and somehow can do something about it, then I would do it. And that's exactly what I'm doing. So, you know, I think at this time, like, I wouldn't want to, like, name someone. Like, we say in Spanish, con nombre y apellido. Because I'm definitely making sure, like, hey, listen, we have to do this and we're going to do it right. But I think that is, like, a learning curve for other individuals to be able to say, wait, I've been in this space and that's happening too. Like, we have to hold each other accountable. And that goes also for organizations that, or groups that are saying that they're going to do or are doing whatever job, and they're really not doing it, or how is it that they're doing it, right? Because also organizations like that take resources, they take money. And then I know that organizations like the Delaware Coalition for Immigration Justice, they could use those resources. They could use the fund as well. By the way, shout out to their hotline that they created and launched officially during the Hispanic parade on the 14th. That is, I'm going to give you guys the phone number. It is 267-382-5423. So, and I know I saw the No Borders Delaware sign during the Hispanic parade, and that is 267-FUCK-ICE. So, shout out to No Borders Delaware for the work that they were doing on the Hispanic parade, for like putting it out there like that. But also to the other organizations, like I said, doing the work and putting out resources like that hotline. Y en español, 267-382-5423.
And fuck ice would be...
Same thing. Well, it depends, like, if it's Puerto Rican or, like... Chinga la migra.
There you go.
Yeah. I, as far as not naming names, I can second that early on in the mapping, it became clear that existing, like, ways of doing things in Delaware, structures that already existed, were not going to be up to this task of what needed to be done, and there was just too much...
Structures in Delaware?
Too much bullshit and infighting that people weren't willing to put aside, and like they need to on this issue, and like that applies for me too. So like the people that run for me in public, because we need to talk about this. I'll drop it for this issue, even if like you're Republican. Like I don't.
But yeah. So I think on that other thing I want to say. When people want to also do work because, you know, they feel bad and it's in like in solidarity, like I want to be there. I think the best approach is always like, hey, like, what does the community need directly? Like, what are they saying? You know, let me hear from the community what they need, rather than this like savior complex of like, no, I know what you need and it needs to be done this way. And if you don't do it this way, then, you know, we're going to have problems with the Delaware way because we have the power. People power is always going to be more powerful than what a lot of these people think. And the ones that are on the ground organizing do know how to gather the communities together and have them show up in the masses. And I think for me, I'm always going to have that. We took out a governor in Puerto Rico in 2019, so we could do this. You know, I already know how to do this. Been there.
I mean, that's one of the most famous Highlands Bunker episodes of all time. We talked to you from the streets of San Juan, banging pots and pans on the night that the governor resigned. And there's no one that I know that can speak more specifically about organizing for something that wound up happening than Maria Beauchamp. That's just a fact. We were there. You did it. You know. Before we get to maybe a little round table that we'll do for patrons only, let's make sure you mentioned some of the ways people can get involved. Have we covered them all? Is there anything else people should know? Social media wise, phone number wise, organization wise, action wise, to sort of get involved in this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think with the Delaware Coalition for Immigrant Justice, what I've heard is if you don't need the hotline, they do need a lot of help as far as donations, even volunteers. Like I know there's a lot of protests going on, but if you'd like to provide like direct protection and like support, they are looking for volunteers. So I believe all that information is at Linktree. So LINK.
Or like DCIJ.org.
Oh, yeah, DCIJ.org.
Yeah. Okay. You could just go to
DCIJ.org.
Yes. Yeah. And I believe they also are going to need like hands on to run the hotline and to be able to like answer people in the moment. We're hoping that the work we get to do in Delaware as like community organizers in different spaces will be enough to get eyes out of Delaware altogether and not even want to bother with us. But it might also be like they get really pissed off and want to come out more. So hands on are going to be, it's going to be important. Right.
So like tying it back to like this Department of Labor thing, there might be 15 businesses soon that need support for the families of their employees. And like this, you know, I know that DCIJ and No Borders and other orgs are doing the work to kind of have that foundation ready should we need it. So
yeah, there's also like other organizations that are doing work around public policy or like leadership development. Shout out to Network Delaware for doing the work. Right. Really appreciate everyone there. But follow DCIJ on social media as well as like No Borders Delaware. Who else are we missing?
I mean, I'm always going to say nice things about La Esperanza.
shout out to Brian. Yes, they're doing great work. Yes, they really are. They're hands-on. And even if they get to a point where they're at capacity, they're still taking people in to try to send them to other resources of Move Quickly. Right. Yes. So yeah. Shout out to La Esperanza for sure.
Nice. Well, folks, we're gonna get into a different kind of conversation right now that you have to pay for to listen to. But, you know, if you don't want to pay for it, that's fine. It's going to be pretty funny.
It's going to be good.
But until then, fuck ICE, free Palestine, and left is best.